Of course, as I get older, and I like electronic logbooks better than what I would have when I was in my 20s, but now that I'm 63, I like it 10 hours off. when my work ethic really started to wane when I found out that feed mills were still open at noon. You didn't have to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You could arrive at noon and still unload.
A little bit of humor?
Yep.
Small fleet owner Larry Lentz got plenty of that. Overdrive's 2023 Small Fleet Champ in the 11 to 30 truck division, L&L Trucking has made a solid direct customer business specializing mostly in animal fats, pulled in 6,800 gallon stainless tanks to supply businesses in various production chains, gear lubes, cutting oils, you name it. Based in Bedford, Indiana, Larry Lemp's sense of humor has probably served him well in decidedly less humorous endeavors than contemplating his own psychology and the shift to electronic logs in 2017, that's sure. He served as chairman of the Indiana Motor Truck Association, participates annually in the IMTA's trips to Washington to visit with reps and senators, and generally keeps his nose to the grindstone building business. Hanging on to business might be the better phrase in the current environment. All of it though with a strong do-it-yourself ethic born of 40-some years in trucking, almost all of it as an owner-operator and then small fleet owner. I'm Todd Dills, and head of the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville this week, I've ventured about an hour and a half's drive north and west of the Kentucky town to Bedford, Indiana, to L&L's shop and world headquarters on a beautiful parcel of land on US 50, east of the center of town. Lemp, who still runs one of the rigs in the fleet of mostly Peterbilt 579s, was headed back from St. Louis after delivery Tuesday morning pulled behind the longest serving Pete in the fleet. It's not a 579, but rather a 2000 Peterbilt 379, Lemp's partial to for a variety of reasons we'll hear about in this Overdrive Radio edition for March 22, 2024, hitting overdriveonline.com/overdrive-radio then on March 25.
I took, prime burning lard oil, which is an ingredient. This place I went to is they make their own oils.
Okay.
And it's just a base ingredient. You know, it'll turn into a gear lube, I'm certain, or a cutting fluid.
He picked up Monday evening, hauled out to St. Louis the same night to stage for morning unload.
Our customer down at Jeffersonville. My load was supposed to have been ready at 7 o'clock last night.
Okay.
They finally got loaded about 8, so I run over last night where I deliver at. They don't, their tank farm is all inside the building.
Okay.
So I just backed up to the dry docks whenever I got there last night. And
just waited for them to ship tomorrow morning.
Yeah. They just got started. All I had to do was go topside and open up my dome lid. They done everything.
Then we
else.
Sat down for a talk through the history of that 2003-79. ELD exempt, it turns out, though he's running an E-Log in it, as in the rest of the fleet. Likewise, his history trucking, marking time by major engine work.
4 years later, the oil pump shaft broke.
By truck model years and other big moves.
I bought my first truck in 1984, summer of 1984. I bought a white Road Commander cab over.
And more after the break, so keep tuned.
In order to keep your diesel vehicle moving this winter, you need to make sure that you have the products you can trust. Howe's Diesel Treat has long been the number one product on the market to prevent gelling. But what if you forget to treat your fuel and find yourself stuck? Reach for Howe's Diesel Lifeline, the only emergency rescue product available that's 100% alcohol-free, fast-acting, and easy to use. Diesel Lifeline is your security blanket on the road. Visit howesproducts.com.
That's H-O-W-E-S. Houseproducts.com. Big congrats are in order for trucker Josh Giesbrecht, operating out of Canada and longtime proprietor of his Trucker Josh video blogs on YouTube, where he's built up a huge audience over more than a decade now, bringing the reality of trucking to everyday folks otherwise uninitiated. Trucker Josh is the latest inductee to the Howe's Hall of Fame, built to recognize those inside trucking and farming communities making significant contributions to the business, all told. Stay tuned for more from my talk with Trucker Josh at Matt's in a future podcast. Now, here's Larry Limp, picking up with the purchase of his longest-serving truck in the L&L trucking fleet today. That's the 2000 Pete 379 mentioned up top. Here we go.
I bought that truck on off of eBay in November of 2010.
So that's an interesting origin.
I was needing a truck, and the guy was really good with his pictures. I knew it had some hood damage. It had a little more hood damage than what the pictures made it look like. But bought it, and you know, the had hood damage, but it was still drivable. Got it home. It was about 980,000, something like that. It just a little short of a million when I bought it.
Miles, that is.
ECM is showing, I think 2.4 or 2.5 million miles now. But got it home and found the right-hand half of the hood on Craigslist. So I think that right-hand half, which was the fender and the top part of it, I think it even had the headlight bucket on it.
Okay.
Got all that for like $750. Okay. Just had to drive back over to Central Illinois to get it. We were getting all of our stuff together to cut the hood apart and put it back together. And it broke a crank record in home, full motor out of it, put a crank in it. It broke that, but it didn't do any damage to the block. Okay. It had to come out of the frame in order to put a crank in it anyway. And with 980,000 miles on it, it was we'll just overhaul it. So we got that done, back to running. It's cat motor.
Okay.
I think it was 4 years later, the oil pump shaft broke. Again, we were fortunate enough that. Even though it was a catastrophic failure, it didn't do any damage to the block. So we put another crank back in it. I think it was October of 14 was when we was the last time that we were in that engine. In recent years, I'm probably down to somewhere around 75 to 80,000 miles a year. I had drivers in it. From the time we got it on the road there in December of 10 through about December of 19, I think.
Okay, so it was
about a 10-year time frame there. It had driver in it all the time.
Right.
According to ECM, we've put about $1.6 million on it since I bought it.
Over all that time, 16 years and 1.6 million miles, those two cranks and the initial overhaul aren't the only bits of powertrain work in this engine scene.
When we had to put the second crank in it, we went ahead and put new pistons and liners at that point in time.
Okay.
And then I think 21, we had to put a head on it, cracked head. In all the years that I've owned Caterpillars, seems like the weakest link is the heads just won't take getting hot.
Today, though Limp's had cats in his trucks going all the way back to some of his very first, the rest of the L&L fleet before the 2003-79 is powered by later model Cummins engines.
Everything else except for that one truck, everything else is a ISX, ISX 15, except for I've got two day cabs that are 2020 models, and I think they're an X15. I mean, I've got a 19 that's I think is also an X15. Which I'm plenty satisfied with the Cummins engine.
Okay.
It's the after treatment. I wish we could just take them off and throw them into the scrap heap of history and move away from that. It's just constant. I got an email this morning from a contact at Penske Leasing encouraging me to think about pre-ordering trucks because she was equating the 2027 motor to the dark days of 2010 when DPF first came out. And
I kind of thought that sounded like an awful dark future for that motor. I guess it'll be great, but is it a rush to market, maybe?
We'll see, right? Why don't you hang on to the 2000 model?
For the most part, it's trouble-free.
Yeah.
Two years ago, when I bought that 2019, I was kind of thinking about parking it then.
Okay.
Then I had second thoughts on that, put a driver in the 2019. But it's, you know, it's simple compared to the, you know, the current engine criteria. It's simple. It's not as simple as cats were back in the mechanical days, but it's a lot more dependable than a cat was back in the mechanical days. But it's just, I enjoy driving it. I don't put drivers out in it. I enjoy driving it, and I just feel at home. First truck I drove on the road was a 1976 narrow cab over Freightliner.
Okay.
That heater worked fine in the summer, not so much in the winter, and you needed to wear a raincoat to drive it for all the water that come around the windshield on it. And it was a 290 Cummins with a 10-speed. And the guy I drove for, he done a good job about taking care of the maintenance. He's passed away now, but his name was Jim Edmister. And he had the truck leased to Shilly Motor Lines. Because Shilly had a terminal down here at Shoals hauling wallboard out of USG.
In fact, I followed a flatbed north from Shoals, Indiana, pulling just such a load toward Bedford on my way to meet Limp this week. I was about to compliment the operator's pristine tarping job on the load when Limp said this.
Nice tarp job on
it. Yeah, they're a tarp service down there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. They got their tarp service.
I see.
I can't really laud the operator there. It's all about the tarp service.
Probably the tarp service had it all squared away, more so than the driver.
Limp rolled out of there in that cab over Freightliner 40 years ago, with the small fleet of Jim Edmister leased on. Very small fleet, that is.
When I started with Jim, he was at 2, and
okay.
When I decided I was going to buy my own truck, he was up to 3.
Okay. He was driving one of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A lot of stuff out of USG. Shelly had some runs out to the East Coast that were like particle board that had laminated particle board.
Okay.
Had a wood design on it. At that point in time, they were building the stadium in Indianapolis for the Colts, which I think it started out maybe the Hoosier Dome, okay, might have been the name of it. And we were loading rebar coming back to Indianapolis. We hauled a lot of rebar back off the East Coast. There was a place in the port of Wilmington called Ford Steel.
Okay.
And they made rebar and wire mesh, like look like fence, but at the port of Wilmington, Delaware. When Hoosier Dome fell off, then we started hauling wire back to a new GM plant that was being constructed at Hamtramck, Michigan. They had a mile square under roof. Trucks be lined up maybe 4 or 5 blocks long,
wow,
waiting to get into the job site of a morning. And when they dispensed you off, somebody of the company that you were delivering to would meet you at the front gate. And they'd lead you back in there, and once you got inside that building, I mean,
yeah,
they wasn't nothing. It was close quarters. It was big.
So when did you decide to buy that first truck of yours?
I bought my first truck in 1984, summer of 1984. I bought a white Road Commander cab over. Another 290 with a 10-speed.
It wasn't a new truck, I don't know.
No, it was, I think it was a 79 model.
Okay. And that was after having driven for how long?
About 2 years.
Okay.
I didn't have that truck very long, and I traded it off for a 1977 conventional Kenworth. I haven't owned a cab over since.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I started, there was more cab overs on the road than what there was conventionals.
Yeah.
Now it's just occasionally you'll see a cab over that's not ancient. I put some money down on a cab over.
You did?
Trying to find finance for a cab over. It was a 2004 model.
Oh, it was a new one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was a ABC Wide World of Sports cab over P.
Okay.
Huh. For a 110 inch cab.
Okay.
Flat floor. I mean, it was a nice truck.
Yeah.
But nobody wanted to tote note on it. Because as soon as you sign that paperwork, it's worth nothing.
Back in the 1980s, when Limp bought the White Road Commander, he wasn't exactly prepared for what he was getting into, he said.
It was a struggle. I wasn't really ready to make the move. Yeah. It was a struggle. The kind of one of those deals, what didn't kill you made you stronger deals.
Right.
And you better be prepared to learn quick because it was going to come at you fast.
He'd split with Jim Edmister about the time of the first truck purchase. Then they would end up colleagues of a fashion with another outfit.
When I bought the truck, because about the same time he had left Shelly Motor Lines.
Okay.
And we both ended up down at Eck Miller at Rockport, Indiana.
Okay.
Which Eck Miller is no longer around anymore either. They had agents in every state.
Gotcha.
I mean, they were a pretty good size operation, and I don't know, they might have had, they may have had 10, 15 trucks that were company trucks, and everybody, the rest of the fleet was all owner operators,
right,
or small fleets leased to them. That was mostly steel and aluminum there, because there was down at Rockport, Rockport, Owensboro area. Alcoa had the plant at Newburg, Indiana. And then there was a Green River Steel was in Owensboro. And then there was another aluminum plant at Lewisport, Kentucky, and I can't remember the name of it. Most of that work there was, you know, kind of Midwest to the South, you know, kind of a triangle.
Okay. That's all flatbed work in your early years, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, divorce came in there somewhere, and I got out of the trucking, or sold out of the trucking business, and worked for a truck dealer up at Indianapolis for a couple of years. I wasn't in sales, so it was all right. I guess what you'd call a gopher. You know, he'd buy equipment somewhere, and he'd send me with a drop deck to go get it get it back to Indianapolis. And then
you were doing some driving. Did you work in the shop there at all? Not really.
You know, nothing that was like for commercial. You know, it was just keeping up with the truck and trailer that I was using all the time. Tyco Truck Exchange.
Tyco.
T-I-E-C-O. Where Tyco was at is now a Quala Wash location. It's been building, been converted over to a tank wash.
You use it sometimes?
Not very often.
Okay.
We don't load anything up there.
Yeah.
So I have been there.
Yeah.
The guy that bought the building and turned it into a tank wash, it first opened up as Circle City Tank Wash. Wasn't that many years, probably less than five. Quala wanted it worse than he wanted.
In the early 1990s, Limp jumped back into trucking in a more conventional way with Central Trucking, or CTI, then out of Edinburgh, Indiana.
Started pulling tanks in October of 95. Paul Marcotte Farms at Moments, Illinois. He's a pretty good sized farm operation up there. I'd say in 95, they was probably close to 5,000 acres. All animal fat.
Yeah, it was the animal fat.
Yeah.
That's how you got into that.
Yeah. Then I filed for my own authority in 2001.
Just 1 year after the 2000 Peterbilt 379 Limp Reserves as his personal truck was built.
I bought the truck in 2010 because I needed a truck.
Right.
Its longevity around here is just because if I've got to be away from the office, I don't want to be shut down because of after trip.
Sure.
You know, I don't run wild. You know, I run an electronic logbook in it, even though it's old enough, it's exempt. I could get by without running an electronic logbook. And when we went to an electronic logbook, we had to spend a significant amount of time in the dash to find the J1939 circuit, because provider had to have that. Now, you know, the truck doesn't have smart sensors on it, you know, like fuel gauges and that sort of stuff.
Right.
But the J1939 was in play. It was already in the harness. We had to find it because the original diagnostic port that was on the truck was just a 6-pin. They said their system wouldn't work with a 6-pin. We had to have more wires than that. And we dug around in there and we found them, and they had voltage on them like they were supposed to have.
Right.
So we changed the plug to a 9-pin and plugged it all in, and it worked. Of course, as I get older, and I like electronic logbooks better than what I would have when I was in my 20s, but now that I'm 63, I like it 10 hours off. When my work ethic really started to wane when I found out that feed mills were still open at noon. You didn't have to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You could arrive at noon and still unload.
Larry Limp, 2023 Small Fleet Champ, who despite that waning work ethic, as it were, in the intervening years went on to build on everything that had come before and grow LNL Trucking to what it is today. We've told that story, which you can find in our Small Fleet Champ series of profiles of last year's 10 semifinalists. Look for a link to that in the show notes for the podcast, or go to overdriveonline.com/small-fleet-champ. Stay tuned for more from LNL Trucking owner Larry Limp about the gantry crane he and his brother, master fabricator Joe Limp, built themselves to pull a Cummins ISX out of a 579 for Larry and crew to try their hands at their first overhaul of that particular model of engine. There will certainly be more in their future on that score, and the opportunity to learn is key for him. It's something of a motto for Limp. I can't. It's not an option, he said, when it comes to overcoming obstacles. For trucking success, quote-unquote, adapt and overcome are certainly words to live by. We'll hear more from Small Fleet owner Limp in the coming weeks, so keep tuned. Find pictures from the visit and the post that will house this podcast when it hits overdriveonline.com on March 25, 2024. Thanks for listening. Overdrive Radio is a production of Overdrive, the voice of the American trucker. It's edited and produced by me, Todd Dills, with the acoustic guitar and other support trucker-songwriter Long Haul Paul Marhover. The theme is Legend of the Snake Man by Marhover, featured in the guitar work of Travis the Snake Man himself, Wemmick, Terry Tusock Richardson on bass, keys by Tishomingo Jim Whitehead, and on drums, Andrew Marshall. The podcast is backed up further by Overdrive's own news editor, Matt Cole, executive editor Alex Lockie, and video editors Lawson Rudisil and Andrew Blinn. See you next time.